Hey, thanks for tuning in to another episode of the How to Become an Elite Financial Advisor podcast. I wanted to extend a personal invitation. If you had questions about coming to our How to Charge Live event in April of 2025, that you would go to howtocharge.live.com. That's howtocharge.live.com. Click on a button there that says schedule the call. And I'd love to answer any questions you have about coming to our event in April. It will sell out, but if you have questions, I want to answer them as quickly as possible so you can get your seat to that event. I look forward to seeing you here with us in April. And now, enjoy today's episode.
Ben, thanks for joining us, buddy. I'm looking forward to kind of peeling back the layers of your practice and trying to share your secrets with everybody.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. So high level, quick start. I love kind of origin stories of how people got into the business. Mm-hmm. You know, I never thought I'd be in this business. If you would have told me what this business was at the beginning, I probably wouldn't have done it. So what was your path?
Yeah, I'm kind of similar to you. I did not really choose it. I think I just kind of lucked into it and then built from there. So I went to college thinking I wanted to be like my dad, be a doctor. And then I went to the operating room with him, saw him break someone's jaw, and I said, I'm out. I don't want to be a surgeon like he is. And so I talked to my dad, and he said, hey, I really think if I wasn't in medicine, I'd be a financial planner. You should go talk to my advisor. And that was... You know, I was home for winter break after one semester in college, met with the advisor, talked for an hour, just asked lots of questions. I knew nothing about the industry. At the end, turns out that was actually an interview for an internship. I just didn't know. I was going to just find out information. I got hired as an intern that summer based on that conversation and things. And from there, I learned about the industry, interned for three summers and spring break and stuff like that. And then out of college, jumped right into that same firm, got hired full time at the same time when they hired me, actually the same day, the day of my graduation, they acquired another small firm in Chicago. And so this was Indianapolis. And so I actually moved to the Chicago office to help transition clients from the retiring advisor that they had purchased. I knew nothing. I didn't choose it, but it was a great opportunity. I wasn't going to pass up. And obviously, they saw something in me and worked there for over a decade full time. And then January 1st, 2020, left, launched Illuminate Wealth Management, and we've been having fun since then.
Man, so when you started in the business, what about it where you're like, hey, this is better than I thought it would be? It kind of exceeds whatever expectations I had. And then what parts of it did you kind of maybe your personality or just naturally struggle with? You had to accept. Mm-hmm.
So there's a couple different things that, you know, just from helping people and having relationships and getting to know people really well. I really enjoy the one-to-one or, you know, 1-to-2 conversations. If I have to stand up in front of a whole group, I can do it, but I don't want to. Mm-hmm. But building a deep relationship with clients has been something as I got better at it, just really enjoyed. And that's just the way I tick. And so that's been awesome. Because I didn't choose it, I didn't have enough information. I didn't have enough education, and I dealt with imposter syndrome the first decade all the time, where I felt I was put in situations that I shouldn't have been in because I didn't have the experience, and just kind of had to fake it till you make it. Looking back, I do think I had more skills than I thought, but in the moment, it was really challenging to go through that. The last thing I'll say, and ultimately why I left, I remember going to a career counselor in high school, and they said, if you're doing anything, I don't care what it is, you need to be known. That's how you're built. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know any entrepreneurs. The closest thing I had was my dad had his own surgery practice. And so that's why I went the medicine to begin with, was that was my way to be an entrepreneur. And when I worked for somebody else for the first decade of my career, and I was a minority partner by the end, I wasn't able to be the entrepreneur. And that's ultimately why I left. It wasn't because it wasn't a good firm. It just wasn't the right firm for me for the next stage of the career. Because what I love about the business now is you can be in any part. You can be a staff advisor and never have to make the management decisions. You could go all the way up to you're running the firm and not actually meeting with clients if that's what you value. And there's a lot of in between in there.
Yeah, that's great. I think the Yeah, when I made my shifts from working on teams to starting Legacy, I didn't choose it. I think at times people are like, man, he must have had this like plan. He was like this like forward-thinking entrepreneur. Like, no, I was just hoping for somebody to kind of keep me on board. And because that situation imploded, it kind of forced my hand. So, you know, now it makes total sense. It's like I was meant to, you know, run a practice, be an entrepreneur, take on the risk. But, you know, there were things in me still that were kind of clinging to comfort and what was known. I'm struggling now as I grow Legacy to say, man, I want great advisors on the team, knowing that there's a chance those advisors go down my path, which means someday I almost want to help them launch. You know, I don't want to be this firm that, you know, you're with us, you're against us. And if you leave, we're in a lawsuit. And it's like, I don't need to try to ruin your life to make a little bit extra money off you. But long-term, like I need advisors that have more of that like intrapreneur spirit versus, you know, entrepreneur. And I know they're out there where they're like, I don't necessarily have to go take the risk and hire the people, but I want to, my opinion to be heard. I want to win if the firm wins. I'm willing to take on some risk, but not full risk. What have you experienced since you kind of made your leap and you found out, hey, I'm in the camp of like, take the leap on my own, but you are going to probably have to find use of the past to come and support you.
Right. So we have two CFPs in addition to me now that work for me, and neither one is a lead advisor yet. And they're really early in their process, and they're very comfortable. You know, we have two of us in every meeting, and so they're getting the exposure with clients, but they're not leading the relationships. But I've thought about that when I hired them. It was, if I train them so well, they're going to leave, right? And that's okay though. And I've thought about it from that risk perspective, which is, if I'm in the business to help people live meaningful lives, I mean, that's ultimately what our purpose is as a business. It's for our clients, but it's also for the people that work with us. And so if the best thing for everybody, and especially for that individual to go leave and launch their own, I'm going to help make that happen. And I want them to actually take the clients with them, because if they have lead relationships and they're building a deep relationship with their clients, I'm never going to replace that. So I want to make sure it's structured. So as a firm, we're not really financially hurt by them leaving in the short term, because we can figure it out long term. It'll be fine. But I actually want to, we're building in like non-solicitation type agreements, a really easy way over reasonable schedule to pay us in it, what I would say is pretty cheaply, to take the clients with them, because that's what I actually want to happen. I want the clients to be served by wherever they go. So that the only reason that someone's going to stay is we've built enough infrastructure around them that they say, I'm better off staying at Illuminate than go launch my own.
Yeah, I think the value prop has to be strong enough that staying still says, hey, you're progressing and there's some upside here. It'll always probably fall short of, hey, you take full risk, go start your own thing, max risk, kind of max upside. The route I've ended up going is saying, I want great advisors. I want to train the heck out of them. I want them to crush it. Their income can keep going up if they do well. But if they do leave, there's a version where they do pay us for it. I don't want to be in the business of like suing people and telling them they can't their skill set to provide for their family. That was done to me before. And, you know, in Tennessee, those are almost impossible to enforce, but somebody can still make your life pretty miserable. I appreciate that of like, hey, there is an out, but you're not going to hurt our business because we helped you. We took all the risk, but there is an off ramp where it's like, we're not, you know, avoiding each other in the Chipotle line.
Exactly, for sure. And one thing I'll say on there is I think that maybe something I've learned, I believe that all of who I am is built to be an entrepreneur. That doesn't mean it's easy all the time. And I was talking to another individual who recently built a house, and his wife is about to launch her own business, and it's a long time friend. And I said, it's a different industry, but I said, being an entrepreneur is great if you're built for it. But I remember when he complained about how detailed building the house was, that you have to choose where the outlets are and every decision that could possibly go into a house, you have to choose. And I said, but the nice thing is once you're done, you go into the house. when you're an entrepreneur, it never stops. You have to make those little decisions all day, every day for the rest of your career. If you're whoever's leading the organization, and if you're ready for it, great. But I think a lot of people see the upside of leaving an established firm and say, oh, I could do this. And I'm not that you can't, but you have to be prepared for what the trade-offs are. And there's a reason why it's high risk, high reward to own your own business. I think once advisors see that, if they're not 100% an entrepreneur spirit, you can keep them in, do a great job of serving their, you know, helping them serve their clients, and then still give them outlets while they're in your firm and let them grow from there.
Yeah, I think entrepreneurs, it's a constant tension that I've gotten better just sitting in. I'm less surprised by things, which is nice to be in that place. I remember hearing somebody say, really, your hope is to solve higher quality problems. Like the idea that like someday you're done, like you'll probably live in a state of frustration if that's your hope. But
that's right.
Yeah, higher quality problems, build your team, and then, you know. Yeah, it's just challenging, and then for the right person, they love it and they embrace it.
Right.
So with your practice,
sounds like you and me are in the same spot.
So your practice jumped out. We get a lot of questions about that. I think all of us advisors get to a place at some point of like, hey, should I or shouldn't I? Mm-hmm. For me as a young advisor, that was kind of always the easiest answer, was like, I'm going to change firms or bounce around. I look back now, and pretty much everywhere I was, except for one exception that was kind of, you know, a little crazy, I had everything I needed to build a great practice and make great income. So you made the jump. Mm-hmm. Your practice then grew pretty quickly in 3 years. If you can kind of unpack for us, because I try to encourage advisors, there's not one magic way. You know, you have to, it's hard, it's challenging no matter what. You got to figure it out. I want to help advisors, because the times when they hear somebody going from 16 million to 100 million in 3 years, I found advisors that feel like that's crazy, I'll never do that. Or they jump to like an excuse of, well, he must have bought a book of business, he must have family with money. And sometimes that does happen. I've met people with amazing practices and I'm scratching my head at how they did it. And then I do find out there's some weird nuance that, that makes sense. But within your story, like, let's try to, you know, go layers and layers deep of like, how did you do it? Mm-hmm. What adjustments did you have to make? Because this is a big question we get from a lot of advisors. And how do you actually grow in a significant way and not this slow organic grind?
Mm-hmm. So we did not acquire any other firms or buy any books of business, except for the launch. So when I negotiated to leave, I had a non-compete, non-solicitation. I was a minority owner, owned 10% of the company. And so through that conversation, I said, okay, I want to take some clients with me. I want some revenue. And so I paid market rate for those clients. And to fund that launch,
you paid like a multiple of revenue?
Exactly. Yes. And the way that I funded it was a combination of some personal debt. And then also I actually from launch brought in two partners, and they are not active in the business, but they were, one was friend we met at daycare at 6 months old, lifelong friend, the same one I was talking about with the house building. And then my mentor who had retired, the person that I took over his practice back at the beginning of my career, he had retired, but we'd stayed in touch. And I said, hey, I think I'm going to launch. And he said, well, how can I help? And it was actually his idea to invest. So they are both owners, equity owners from day one, and they helped the cash flow first year. I mean, that's really what it came down to, because if I had to take a bunch of debt and have zero savings left for my family with the income drop that I had the first year, it would have been a real challenge to grow the way that I wanted to grow. So that helped from day one. So I sold from launch 12.5% to each. So I only owned from day one 75%.
Good.
That helps the first year. I would say for the first 6 to 8 weeks, I was super excited to be a solo. And that was my plan, was to be a high efficiency solo, 30 clients max, never hire a staff member, do everything as efficiently, have an 85% profit margin. I had it all spreadsheeted out, right? It was going to be easy. And I have people in my peer group, which we've been a part of a peer group for over a decade of other advisors in the Midwest, who had done that. They'd launched solos. I realized really quickly how isolated I felt, and that I really missed being a part of a team to celebrate wins with, to delegate things that I'm really bad at, to work together collaboratively, to have multiple people in client meetings. So by the end of 2020, you know, obviously we had to go through the COVID shutdowns and everything else. By the end of 2020, I added a first member to our team, and he was a career changer looking to get in the industry. And I could see the skill set was a nice compliment. And said, why not? He's willing to take a pay cut. He believes in the vision, join the team. I would argue he's the reason we're where we are, because he was able to compliment me and help. You know, I'm the dreamer. I'm the visionary. I'm thinking big picture. I got ideas all the time. I have extremely high urgency, so I want to solve everything immediately. He's the one that says, okay, well, let's put a project plan together. Let's build this out. Let's put some structure in place. Let's not just go and reach for the next shiny object. And so having the balance was huge for us to allow us to be intentional and not just reactive to things. So that was the first year. We also, because I was able to start with some clients, I got a few referrals early on from those existing clients. And what was not intentional, but one of those referrals became, a mega referral partner, where they have referred 7 other clients to me. And so through referrals, it's just grown from there. We help them through major transitions. That's why they needed an advisor to begin with, help them through it, built a great relationship. And he's told everybody about us, and we continue to grow from referrals. That's our number one way for the first 2.5 years was about just client referrals. Nice. And revenue doubled or tripled each of the first couple of years. And then, so now, as we talk right now, we have about 110 million AUM. And at this point, it's 4.5 years into the business. But through that whole process, now we're getting to the point where we have some external referrals or networks we're part of that we're getting our name out. And then 1.5 years ago, I actually started being on podcasts as a brand awareness play. And we are now seeing the fruits of that. Even podcasts I was on 1 year ago, I just got a call earlier this week that was, hey, I heard you on this podcast. Let's talk. And so it's finally getting out there and doing that. So I can go deeper on it, but that's the big picture.
No, I love that. Going back to with the equity partners, helping you a lot up front, I appreciate that approach, because I think, and that's, you know, how a business owner thinks, is it's not, I have to have all this money in the bank before I can make a change. It's, you know, it's creative financing. It's personal debt to invest in yourself, which can be scary at times. Is there anything there structurally? Like, do you say, hey man, I wish I would have done a convertible note where I had a chance just to pay them off and then it might convert to equity? Sounds like you have kind of two ideal partners to some degree. Right. What's kind of your reflection on that?
So I'm really glad that I built in from day one that in 10 years I could buy them out. It's a call option for me that at any time after the 10-year mark, I can buy them out with a multiple of revenue at that point. So there's no question. I do almost every time I talk to them, I'm like, you're not buying us out, right? We're not gonna make this happen, because they've been a big part of it, and we've grown way faster than I thought. Yeah. And so it's worked out for everybody. Yeah. But from day one, I intentionally said, I don't want a scenario. I don't know what this is going to turn into. And so I want to make sure that there is an out, that it's fair to everybody. So that's why we gave us the 10 years. Actually, originally it was 5 years, and we went through another round of funding 1 year ago and changed it to 10 for everybody. So I actually now have 13 partners, but I only had to end up selling another 7% of the firm. And we added more cash to the bank, give us better cash flow. I spent a lot of time. I love listening to podcasts. That's also why I like to be a guest on podcasts. I love to listen to podcasts, read books. I spent a lot of time thinking, if we were not financial planners, if we were in the tech industry, if we're in Silicon Valley, what would we do? Well, what I've done is what we do. We'd have multiple rounds of funding. We would get cash to the bank to make sure we can grow. We'd have long-term plans, but pivot when opportunities present themselves. And we can touch on some of the pivots we've made if that's interesting. But I've intentionally said, I don't want to do what other financial planning firms have done. Mm-hmm. It's, I need to know what they're doing, but we're a business first. So what are other businesses outside the industry doing?
Yeah, that's great. Well, let's, I want to kind of sit on and finish with the kind of your peer group experience. I think most of us in the industry agree accountability, joint work, all of that helps. Yeah, most advisors I meet are somewhat on an island. They may be around other advisors, but they're not seeking feedback. They don't want the accountability as much. Maybe in a moment of kind of energy, they'll be like, I'm ready to do it. And they kind of fade away. Well, was that like a no-brainer to start? How did you find that group? And why is that group effective?
So I launched the group 2 years into my career at a conference. So I was at a conference and it was a group of under 33 that were meeting together and just having some good conversations, seeing people in similar positions. I was the youngest of the people we were talking to. I hear that all the time from my peer group. You're the youngest guy, like you're the baby of the group. But I launched the group and the intention was we don't have anyone outside the people in our firm that we can trust. Mm-hmm. And there's some conflicts of interest there. So let's set up regular meetings. So we did it. I think it started every 3 months we would meet in person or on Zoom. And then we also developed monthly calls, but it was six advisors, which at the time we were all junior planners at that point around the Midwest, but nobody was directly competing with another. So it's all different cities. And we felt that was important so we could be open about marketing or sales tactics that we're using that are being effective and not then step on each other's toes. But it was close enough that we could drive to each other. So when we had meetings in person, it was easy when we were all junior planners and didn't have the budget to fly. We could make that work. It started with, we don't know what we don't know. It's developed to every single person now in the group, and it's the same group, are owners of their own business. Half of them have left the businesses they were in and started their own. Others have bought in and become majority partner.
Nice.
And so we're all different sizes at this point, but we developed a relationship for over a decade that we can now lean on and say, I know your motivations. I know where you're coming from. It's a deep relationship that's outside of just what are the tactics we're coming up with. So when I say, here's something I'm struggling with an employee or something, you know, how do you compensate somebody fairly on this? I've got five other people who all know my motivations who are coming back. And I don't know that I would have even left my firm if I didn't have the support of seeing two other people left a year before I did and started their own businesses. So I just got to see secondhand what's actually happened. What are the struggles from year one? What's gone well, what hasn't. And we are so open that we share everything. I know all the P&Ls from everybody in the business. We share all that. I have a copy of their advisory agreements. I know the way they bill. I know the way they're marketing, what their strategies are. We could go as in depth as possible for everything.
Love that. The
I've also tried to buy two of them, but that's just because I really want them on my team, you know, day to day.
Ben, stop doing that. Yeah,
I know.
So I love that. So for anybody listening, no matter what stage you're in, what jumped out to me is that you were junior planners at the time doing that. Mm-hmm. And I think there's times where it's like, that's not what junior planners do. You know, maybe senior advisors are part of a mastermind that's expensive someday, but that there's so many ways to just seek accountability. And then at times it sounds like you've kind of borrowed their confidence to make big decisions.
Oh, absolutely. And from the beginning, the very first conversation we had as a group, when we all met together the first time, someone else said, so what does everyone make? Like, we were just going to set the vulnerability from day one. What does everyone make? But here's why that was really important. We're all early in our career. We don't have access to the benchmarking studies. Mm-hmm. We don't know what's fair. And we have no idea if it's good, if it's bad, whatever else. It was interesting because somebody heard what everyone else made and was like, oh, I make the most. Here I thought I was underpaid, and now I find out I'm actually paid really well. It changed their trajectory in their firm because now they had the confidence to say, oh, I am treated fairly. I just didn't know.
Wow.
And so being vulnerable from day one as a junior planner, I think is maybe even more valuable than later on, you know, at this stage that I'm at.
Yeah. So I think you had it in you to start a group. I know there's study groups within firms. I was always a fan of kind of getting out of the firm I was in and kind of get other perspectives. Every time I did that, I realized the person that I thought was the top producer in my firm was like mid to low in the grand scheme of things. And that kind of helped open my eyes to maybe what was possible, not discounting what they'd accomplished. But like, if that was truly, you know, if an advisor producing $1 million was all I knew, and that was my whole goal in life. But then I'm like, wait, that how's their firm doing 5-10 million? Well, because they have a team and they have multiple advisors and this person's a solo practice and neither one's better. You just have to choose what type of entrepreneur you want to be. So if somebody's not in a group now and they're like, I don't want to start a group. I don't know where their group is. I mean, there's groups like our EAN group is great. People join it. We coach them. But what's kind of even a baby step of accountability in that way?
So what worked for me was just meeting like-minded people and just saying, hey, let's just have a conversation. You don't even have to make a formalized group, right? Just get networking of things. And I still value conferences, and I send our less experienced, you know, planners to conferences and want to make sure you're getting opinions from other people. So that, you know, that's what worked for me. I've been in other groups. When we launched with XY Planning Network. And they've got a launch group. I forget what they call it, but when you're starting and so other people in the same stage, that's helpful. So different organizations present opportunities to say, hey, let's just connect people. And so just start with the networking. Even if you're an introvert and don't like it, you don't have to sell anything. A lot of times people just want to, if you're solo or you feel isolated in your company, someone just wants to tell you what they're experiencing. You don't have to lead the conversation. Just have the conversation, right? And let them vent to you about what the struggles are. You're going to find things that are similar and things you can help with, no matter the stage that you're at.
Yeah, I think what comes to my mind is maybe one, just ask good questions. You know, people love to share and you can learn from that. I do think that there's a point of like vulnerability where it was like, for this to get real, we need to kind of extend some trust maybe before it's fully earned to kind of test it out. I think that's where I've gotten the most out of peer groups or networking groups. And when it's like, guys, kind of here you go, opening the hood, showing you stuff. I'm not proud of all of it. Some of it I'm, you know, got some limiting beliefs about. But as I got down that, I kept reinforcing, this is good. This is good. I have to have it. And as soon as you get a taste of accountability and best practice sharing, and it helps you make a big decision, I have found advisors, you then can't live without it.
Oh, absolutely.
So kind of breaking through.
And we've developed over time, right? It was about career path and how do you talk to the senior advisors to get opportunities and that. And then it turned to, okay, now we're in the decision making in the financial planning committee or something. So what are you guys doing for, are you doing single premium immediate annuities or not? Like, how's your firm approach it? And what are your assumptions in a retirement projection? And what software are you using? And we do demos of CRMs and stuff. I mean, that was what it turned into. And now we're running businesses. So it's a whole nother set of problems, but we've just grown together over time.
That's great. All right. Last question for you before you wrap. If you were sitting across from your past self now as an entrepreneur running a business, managing people, What would be your biggest piece of kind of business entrepreneur advice for your younger self?
My number one thing would have been, it's a long-winded answer, so sorry about that. I don't think I developed as quickly until I actually moved further away from my office and I had a longer commute. And I did that for a family reason, and that went from 15 minutes to 40 minutes each way, which sounds bad right now because I walk here from my house that's just down the street. But that time fit really well with the way that I learn, which is auditory learner. And so I started knocking out audiobooks on the commute. I did lots of podcasts. I did all these things that only happened towards the end of my time at my old firm, that I actually think if I'd figure out a way to dive in and learn more earlier, just outside of what I was taught in the firm, just get new ideas, I probably would have developed a little bit faster and maybe even had left sooner, which it worked out really well. But I have, even when, you know, my commute is 5 minutes, I now block out time to make sure that I'm just reading things, I'm listening to things, I'm listening to podcasts, whatever it is, getting the information. That's how I'm built, is to be curious. And I wasn't tapping into that early in my career. Midpoint, I was just kind of presented the opportunity, didn't do that on purpose, but I think that really helped get me to where I am today.
I love that. Yeah, I had Andy on our team told me this years ago. He's like, creativity increases the farther you get away from home. That's why conferences are great. You know, mm-hmm. trips in general, even if it's kind of like a business retreat on your own. But yeah, I've seen a direct correlation between like the level of curiosity within a business owner and advisor and their success, versus I'm going to kind of hunker down and solve small problems in front of myself and feel comfortable, versus, man, I'm going to open this thing up and let all sources pour in. Because yeah, once you have that new idea,
I gotta. Yeah, it just goes. I have to laugh because so number two guy, Eddie, he's on our team. He blocks out the day I get back from vacation time to hear all my ideas, because if I'm sitting by the pool, but you know, my wife's ideal vacation is sit by the pool in the sun, right? And, or by the beach, and I'm listening to a podcast the whole time. So we just got back from a 3-day trip and I have 55 items from an audiobook and podcast. I wrote down notes. And so Eddie's just got it ready because he knows you get away from home, you get away from the day to day. That allows you to have the space to be creative and think about next steps. So
it's great. Yeah, I'm sending emails to myself all the time. It's great.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Oh man, Ben, thanks brother. Keep up the good work, man. It's always good to hear somebody take the leap and keep crushing it.
Thanks for having me on. This was fun.
You bet.
Hey, thanks for listening to that episode. I want to invite you to tune into episode 167 that we'll be releasing in February of 2025. It specifically interviews three different advisors about their experience adding planning or improving their planning business based on the things that we teach at our live event and in our coaching program. And the reason I think that you're going to really enjoy it is because it's advisors with different amounts of experience implementing planning in different ways, who all paid their own money, their own investment to come and to get trained or coached by us. And I think you'll be encouraged to hear about how they implemented what they learned. And I hope, and Sten and I, we both hope that you'll consider joining us at our in-person event in April of 2025, because that really is where we find advisors who take the time to step out of their day-to-day life, who then go home and implement what we teach, that they find the most success. And that's what we want for you, to become an elite advisor. And so please check out that episode 167. And as always, thanks for listening.